This is Phil Farron. And I am driving, well, not home. I am driving around today. And in fact, I'm on kind of a tight schedule today. It is 4:38. I am supposed to be home watching Clara, my granddaughter, at about 5:45. So that normally wouldn't be a problem because it takes me 20 minutes to get home. However, my camera is in and it's in the other direction. So I'm going to run down during rush hour. I'm going to run down and try to pick up my camera. And I'm going to have to put this on pause. And then I'm going to run back to where my wife serves as the music minister, drop off the recorder to her, because she has to use it tonight to record a few more things for the Christmas cantata that's on Sunday. And then I have to hightail it home and get changed and get down to my kid's house and bring enough stuff to where I'll play with the granddaughter for a little while there, and then we'll put her to bed, and then I will do whatever I'm going to do after that. So anyways, got to get that all done in an hour, which I think it will be fine. It will be fine. Everything will be fine. It's been a good week this week. Got a lot of things accomplished. I did have my meeting. Oh, I mentioned that last week. Never mind. Did have my meeting on the big new project, so started putting a couple of things into play for that this week, trying to manage the political dynamic on that and get people on board and make sure everybody understands what is happening and where the potentials are and all that kind of good stuff. So got that, a lot of that stuff in play. Because I was kind of distracted with that, I did just a goofy thing this week. I know better than this, and I just did a goofy thing. Microsoft was selling the Dell Venue Pro tablet, which is a pretty good deal because it's $299, and with that you get Windows 8.1, that it runs decently from what everybody says. You get Windows 8.1, plus you get Home Office, or Home Student, Office Student, which will give you Word and Excel. I mean, it's, you know, for $299, that's a good deal. At least I think it comes with that for $299. I'm not sure. I know the special did. So Microsoft on Monday was running that special for the first 100 for $99. And it was going to go on sale at 10 o'clock. I read all the news reports. It's 10 o'clock. I put an appointment in. That's 10 o'clock Eastern time, 9 o'clock Standard time. I'm ready. Told my wife about it. $99 for a tablet with Windows 8.1 and Office Student. So I'm going into work. Get there about 8:45, and I'm thinking about all the things I got to do for this new project. I don't even think about it. My calendar thing goes off. I'm in a meeting. I didn't even hear it. So we call together this other meeting. We have this meeting. I come out. It's like 9:45. I'm thinking, oh, great. It's time. You know, so I go over there. Everything's sold out. After they sold out the initial 100, then they had more available for $199, which is still a good deal. Completely missed all of them. Completely missed them. Sadness. Sadness. Anyways, that's okay. That's okay. I did, over the weekend, finish another one of my tutorials by Karis Ionit. And thankfully, this time, he did not send me the PSD file. And I did the tutorial and sent it to him. And he wrote back and he said, okay, I guess you can copy my work. Ta-da! So at least we're through that now. So now I have, you know, I'll be doing 5 more tutorials with him to get my total of 10 tutorials in. And sent me the next one, which is cool. It's like a water surface, and it's got an elephant and a little girl playing on it, and they're spraying each other with water. And you can see all the shadows of the girl and the elephant in the water and the clouds in the background. It's really cool. It's cool. Very, very, very cool. It's going to be fun. So looking forward to doing that. And you can see the damp spots on the elephant from where it's, you know, been drenched in water. And none of that is on the original photo. So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. So that's cool. That's done. I'm doing edits now on Amanda and the Cog Shifting Imp. I've had a couple of interesting conversations about that. But if by any weird chance you're actually going to read Amanda and the Cog Shifting Imp, I can't really talk about that because it'll give away some of the things in the plot. And I don't like hearing spoilers any more than I like to give out spoilers. So we're not going to talk about that. What we are going to talk about today, I had another article that I was going to talk about today and I had bookmarked it. And then I couldn't find my bookmark, so then I did a Google search for it. I love the Google searching. Was able to locate it, and then I read some people's reactions to the articles, and I thought, oh, that's actually pretty good. And then I got to thinking, oof, I don't know if I want to talk about this or not. It had to do with men and housework, and I don't know. I may revisit it. I may get back to it. So I won't talk any about that. I may get back to it because it's an interesting topic to me. It's just a fascinating thing, the way we gender divide stuff. It's fascinating. But a friend of mine had sent me... he had sent me a link on YouTube to a video that he had watched that was from the same people that did the video that I talked about two or three podcasts ago. I can't remember for sure. It was the one about how quantum mechanics disproves materialism and realism. And this same guy had put out another one, and he had sent me the link for that, and I watched it last night, and I thought, ooh, this is quite good. So I thought I'd kind of go through what he talked about in that, because it's very intriguing. I mean, it is truly intriguing. And it has to do with quantum mechanics and the potential, because of the way quantum mechanics work, the potential that in fact we live in a virtual reality. And by that, I mean that we live in something that is very similar to an Xbox playing a game. And one of the things that I found intriguing about this is the fact that this has been kind of something that's been perking in the back of my mind, because I've heard these things and the rumblings of this in discussions about quantum mechanics and on little philosophical things here and there. Because as we have adopted this ability in, and as our ability has increased to create virtual worlds inside the computer, it's only natural that somebody would start asking the question, well, is this what our reality is like? And I find it really fascinating, first of all, how we couch our descriptions and interpretations of reality in terms that agree with our philosophical bent. For instance, Einstein came up with his theory of relativity, and Einstein's theory of relativity is fairly concrete. The laws of the universe are set. It is fairly straightforward. It's not exactly like Newtonian physics. Newtonian physics is a lot more rigid than it was. But then again, Newton probably was more rigid in his religious beliefs than Einstein was. And then comes along Niels Bohr, who, from what I understand, was a Buddhist. And so his idea of reality conformed more to the Buddhist ideals of reality. And he comes up with a theory that it's much more chaotic at the foundational level. And it's just interesting to see those flavorings and those tones being mixed in on the basis of a person's philosophical bent. So, you know, when people start realizing the potential of virtual worlds, I think it's just natural that they begin then to ask questions, given they have this experience of playing games on the Xbox, on the PlayStation, playing games in virtual realities, SimCity, you know, what is the big, Second Life, there's another one, Ever something, anyways, EverQuest. I think it's just natural then that people then take that experience and begin mapping it onto our own reality to say, okay, well, how much does this correspond to our current reality? What's fascinating, though, is that, okay, there's a train across the road here. Oh, okay, it's moving. It was stopped there for a minute. And I was thinking, ooh, this is going to take a long time if there's a train stuck across the road, but it's moving up. What's fascinating about this is as people began talking about this potential in their quantum mechanic discussions, specifically with regards to some sort of holographic projection, and people started looking at it. There's certainly no proof, per se, but it really gets interesting when people say, okay, here's the two theories. We have an objective reality that simply exists, and it does all the things we observe that exist. Or we actually have a virtual reality. And which of these two theories corresponds more closely to our observation, and which of these two theories makes more sense when we look at things? And in fact, there was a man who wrote an article. They brought this up in the data. Brian Whitworth. He wrote an article comparing objective reality and virtual reality. And he looks at all the facts and says, okay, which of these data fits better with virtual reality? And he started with, okay, so we have a big bang. Space-time emerges from nothing. Well, the fact is that virtual reality fits well with a big bang because this happens all the time. When we turn on our consoles, our Xbox consoles, there is no universe. And it boots up, and suddenly there's a universe. Or the idea of quantum minima. By quantum minima, the idea is that everything can be reduced to a lowest elemental similar particle. And in the article, I guess this guy, you know, noted that it was very interesting that this idea of everything being reduced to an elemental single type of particle with just variations on it was very close to something like computer pixels that are on a screen. That when you look at a virtual world, at the end of it, after all the calculations are done, you can reduce it to simply a collection of pixels. that are calculated. You know, they talked about different things like the speed of light. Why in an objective reality would there be a fixed limit like the speed of light? Well, perhaps if you're in a virtual reality, that limit is set by the processing capabilities of whatever is generating the virtual reality. And one that I thought was very cute is this whole idea of bending space and time by massive objects. That when you get a massive object, that time dilates and everything slows down when you get that massive object. And, you know, he discussed that and said, so if you have a really massive, complex simulation that you're running, and that starts to stress the processor, you know, the processor starts running slower, which I thought, well, okay, that's kind of interesting. You know, I'm getting ready to turn in to go get my package, taking my life in my hand by darting in front of some people. And I'm going to run in and go grab my package. Hopefully I won't be gone long enough that this will stop recording. Hope not. I'll be right back. Okay, so I'm back. So that was kind of interesting. And I guess he had a bunch of other criteria and things, but basically he got to the end of it and he had all these things listed and he had this big chart and said, okay, so here's all the different things we observe in the universe. Does the explanation of a virtual reality fit better than an explanation of an objective reality? And in fact, the conclusion that he came to in this article as scientist was that it fits better with a virtual reality. That we live in some sort of a constructed reality. Now, obviously, that doesn't prove anything. It's just basically a thought exercise. But this idea of a virtual reality, there apparently are a lot of quantum theorists that are thinking about this and saying, you know, this is very intriguing. And it seems to make things fit. So, let's just say that this is true. It might actually explain some things and help things make more sense in terms of the quantum world. For instance, entanglement. We have this law that information, we think it's a law, can't travel faster than the speed of light. And yet, we have this observed phenomenon called entanglement, where you can take two particles and entangle them at the quantum level, separate those particles from as much distance as you want, and change the state of one particle, and instantly the state will change on the other particle. Instantly. Well, one way to look at that is if we are in a virtual manufactured reality, every pixel on the screen is the same distance from the central processing unit that is creating those pixels. So to the central processing unit that is causing those pixels to turn on and off to create that virtual reality, distance is immaterial. And it can instantly change those particles. So, yeah, that's pretty interesting. And, of course, quantum mechanics the theorists have maintained, that, in fact, what we observe, our reality, doesn't exist at all until we observe it. And at that form, the waveform collapses, and we have an observable reality. And in fact, they go farther to say, one of the main guys, Heisenberg, I think, was one of the guys who postulated this. I'm not sure who it was. I didn't write it down. It's in a book called The Quantum Enigma, page 129. So anyways, that quantum probability is not the probability of where the atom is. It is the objective probability of where you or anybody will find it. The atom wasn't someplace until it was observed to be there. So in other words, according to quantum mechanics, if these guys are correct, you know, the universe really is behaving more like SimCity. When I have the computer booted up and I'm looking at it, everything is dots. But when I look away, it's not, which is kind of interesting. And what this guy in the video on YouTube, by the way, the name of the video on YouTube was Digital Physics Argument for God's Existence. And it's on a channel called Inspiring Philosophy, all one word, Inspiring Philosophy. So the question that arises from all this immediately is, okay, so who's the programmer and where's the computer? Because when people started talking about this years ago, when I first heard about this, are we living in a virtual reality? This was one of the first things I was like, oh, okay, well, if we are living in a virtual reality, it has to be constructed by someone, and who is that someone? So there's a couple of things that people do to kind of get away or around the obvious uncomfortable solution. And one of them is to say, well, we're just a simulation by higher beings. That really doesn't solve the problem. It's like, okay, so then are those beings in a quantum virtual reality, or are they in an objective reality? And I hadn't thought about this before, but the video made an interesting point that if those beings are in an objective reality, you have a little bit of a problem. And that is, our virtual reality seems to be composed of quantum particles, which are more complex than objective reality particles that we observe. They have more information, they have different behaviors and more complex behaviors. So if our reality was actually being created by something that was in an objective universe, the processing requirements and the storage requirements would be enormous. Because you would have to unpack all that quantum information so that it could be stored in an objective reality. And when you do that, the information is going to bloat. It's going to get bigger, lots and lots bigger. So now you end up with needing a processor that has an information storage that far exceeds what we observe in the physical universe, which is an interesting idea. So, okay, well, if our reality, it's unlikely that our reality is created from an objective reality, our world as we think we see it, then what are the other options? Well, the other option is that our world is created by an objectiveless, a materialless mind. Because while some would try to contend that to have mind, it must exist in matter, in fact, quantum mechanics seems to say that matter cannot exist without mind, not vice versa. That in fact there is some way for mind to exist. Well, it doesn't say there's some way for mind to exist, but it gives the indication, since mind creates matter, that mind existed before matter. And once you get there, I mean, even once you get there, it's really not that far of a hop to get to a God who created the universe. Now, I'll tell you honestly, I have a series of books called The God War Chronicles. And one of the... And the core idea of The God War Chronicles is that there is a reality that exists on 24 planes of existence that have all sorts of different properties in terms of the way they balance matter and energy and all those things. They're virtual worlds. And that there is this race of beings who manufacture life forms, who raise them, and then at the end of each cycle, there's this gigantic battle across all 24 planes of existence. And whoever wins gets all the life force from those, and whoever loses, loses that life force. And it's this giant, long-lasting, eternal battle where ultimately the only justification for existence is war. And it's a series of books called The God War Chronicles. Well, in that, in the first book, I'm actually going to be discussing a creation story that's similar to the Judeo-Christian ethic and a redemption story that's similar to the Judeo-Christian ethic. And if you have people who are inside that, the idea is, how would you ever know that you were inside a simulation and not the final? How would you ever know that the quote-unquote God that you were serving was truly God or was simply a simulation from a God that was above him? And frankly, you can play those kind of games all day long, but the final resolution of that question is that you could never know. There's no way for you to know whether or not you're the end of the chain or the top of the chain or the middle of the chain. You just can't know that. None of that changes the fact that it appears at this point that if this idea of a virtual existence, that if everything we have and everything we see is in fact a virtual existence, none of that changes the fact that if that's true, that we live in this virtual existence, then in fact there has to be something above us. And in fact, what is above us may be what we have typically referred to as God. So it's very interesting. I just turned around because I think I missed the street that I need to go down to get to my beloved's church that she's working at. Wait, is that it? Where is the street? Too much snow, hard to see. Anyways, so that's all fun. It's fun. So I guess then the question would be, there's a couple of things that come out of this for me, and it kind of marries in with what I've been thinking about for the last several weeks. That, okay, what's the point of all this? What's the point of all this struggle? What's the point of redemption? What's the point? What's the point? What's the point of our existence? Because sometimes life is hard. Sometimes you got things you got to do and you just got to press through and do them. And what's the point of all of this? And I think I've mentioned it a couple of times on the podcast that one of the ways I'm characterizing this now, I used to say, well, it's so that you could have epics and adventures and quests and all those things. But one of the ways I'm characterizing it now when I talk to friends is that all of this exists to give you the opportunity to be extraordinary, to give you the opportunity to do something that you can point to and say, for me, that was something that was extraordinary for me to do. That's something I can leave behind. I can make my mark. Whether anybody knows about it or not, I know that that was extraordinary for me to do. And I think that's really cool. And the other thing that this does for me is, I think I mentioned that I was talking to a friend about the previous talk, the friend who had actually pointed it towards me, this idea that the universe does not exist without an observer. And he said, well, one thing that's quite compelling to me about all this is, if what you say is true, that you believe that faith is baked right into the world, then in fact it makes it easier to understand how faith could be baked right into the world if nothing exists in the world unless there is an expectation and it is observed to exist in the world. And to that I say, right. So who knows? Maybe that spoon will bend someday, because in reality, true reality, there is no spoon. And the Matrix actually got it right. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have not made it home, but I am where I need to be.